Live or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 23rd of June, Anno Domini 2012, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. It's time for the news. And we'll start with Twitter. Twitter had its largest outage of the year on Thursday when it went out just before noon. The service was down in the U.S. and other parts of the world. In the U.S., Twitter came back up about 70 minutes later, only to suffer at least two subsequent outages. The microblogging service blamed the problem on a cascading bug that had a significant impact on all users worldwide, said Mazen Rawashda, I knew I was going to screw that up, vice president of engineering on the company's blog. It's imperative that we remain available around the world, and Thursday we stumbled. The bug was an internal one, not caused by an external hack, said the vice president, who noted that the site had not been had been available more than 99.96% of the time over the last 6 months. Still, what might have been a small flaw caused a big outage, said McAfee representative Phyllis Schneck. More than 140 million active Twitter users bombard the site with 340 million tweets a day. Let me repeat that. 340 million tweets a day via the web, smartphones, tablets, and computers. Unable to send their 140 characters or less missives, many were left wringing their hands. So where will I get my snarky, smug, or mildly humorous thoughts for the day, mused Kyle Walker in Santa Monica, California. Many went to Facebook for a social media fix to help friends persevere. Website editor Tanya Valdez advised, don't panic. You will live. You can get through this. As Twitter came back up, hashtag when Twitter went down became a top 10 trending topic on the site. Others joked about the addictive hold the site has on their lives. Twitter went down. I looked up and was like, who are these people in my house? Turns out I have a wife and a daughter, tweeted Ryan McGee, a writer for ESPN, the magazine. Outages are not unusual for Twitter. Usually it's an overcapacity issue, but occasionally it's some other technical problem, said Shelley Palmer, author of Overcoming the Digital Divide. When it fails, Palmer said, it shuts off thousands of dedicated live news feeds to literally millions of people. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is how did you handle the Twitter outage? Your choices are, it was horrifying, I'm okay now, really, and I had no idea, what did I miss?
That's where I'd be.
We have 34 votes. All of you had no idea what did you miss. Clearly, our next poll should have something to do with smoke signals or telegraph.
Are cups on a string?
Yeah. On the other hand, for those of you who have managed to become dragged kicking and screaming into the 21st century, you can head over when you're done with the poll, check the yellow box underneath the poll. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
And the question there is, where were you during the great Twitter outage of 2012? And, of course, that's our question to you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415. 1-5. Seriously, 37 votes, none of them talk about whether or not that they've ever been on Twitter. Is there anybody listening who's on Twitter? Or are you all still on MySpace wondering where everybody went? or are you all still on, you're still trying to use up your 500 hours on AOL?
Oh, that's bad.
All right, to the phones. Robin. Our first caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dennis. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Last week you were talking about Windows Defender offline. So I burned a CD. I have Windows 7, and changed my BIOS so that the system would boot from the CD. It booted from the CD okay, but then the interface did not come up. It went right back into Windows 7, you know, as if I was just signing on regularly. Do you have any thoughts of why that would happen?
Who talked about that last week? I think that was
yeah.
I think that was Dave.
It was something we had mentioned about an external disk that you boot your CD from. When you burned the file to the disk, how did you do it?
First, I downloaded something that then took me to the full download.
Yeah, because normally once you get the file, you got it within your software, make it so it's a bootable disk.
Right, you can't just burn the file to a disk.
Yeah,
you have to burn the file system as a bootable disk. What you generally download is called an ISO, and you burn that to the disk as a bootable image. You can't just copy the file to the disk and burn that.
Okay, I don't know if I did that properly then.
Yeah, probably not.
That's the key.
Which would explain why it didn't boot that that disk.
So run that by me one more time, how to do it correctly.
Well, in the software, usually when you're going to burn, you know, and it has you select a file, there's also an option to make it a bootable disk.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, and your system's going to be set up so that it knows to first check the CD-ROM drive to then boot it off of there.
I did that part to have the system as the first boot device be CD.
Right. Now you just got to make the CD bootable.
Okay.
And that's in your software to burn.
You have to burn it as an ISO image, not as a file.
Okay. Yeah. You know what? I do not think I burned it as an ISO image. I think I just burned it as a file.
And that'll do it.
That should do it.
Okay. Thank you.
Wait.
Well, I'm putting a link up on our link site on specific instructions on how to do that. As an ISO image.
Oh, right. That's great.
So give it about a minute and check that out, and you should be able to get it right from there.
Thanks for your help, guys.
Sure, thank you.
Bye.
Now, the reason I was cheering before is because I had to play with another box here because of us doing the live remotes from the Jazz Fest.
Right.
Yeah, whatever button you pushed over there made the audio much better.
Yeah.
You turned off something.
Yes, I did. What it is it's the link that goes from here up to Jazz Fest, you know, up on Gibbs Street. So if that had been left on, which Rob finally informed me, you got to turn this off or you're not going to be able to take any calls on Saturday. But, and that's why I was writing myself another note, is I got to turn it back on so that when they go to do the live remotes tonight or in the rest of the weekend.
Yeah.
They're
going to
get there, yeah. So,
speaking of which, ladies and gentlemen, the Xerox Rochester International Jazz Fest is in full swing. You should definitely check it out. You should definitely go down. It's happening really all over the East End, I guess. The Eastman
Pretty much,
Theater,
yeah, all over, yeah.
Lots of other little venues.
There's a lot of free stuff and a lot of paid stuff.
A lot of free stuff, a lot of paid stuff. Hand me the booklet over there, would you?
Oh,
there's a trifold, there's all kinds.
Well, there's
of
a couple that I, since we're going on about this, tonight on East Avenue and Chestnut Street, there's a great group that's going to be there called the Outlaws. They'll be performing. Again, that's a free concert. Now, on Monday night in the Fusion Tent, there's a local group here from Rochester, Tegan and the Tweets. They are going to be playing...
good music. I've heard them several times.
She and that band. Matter of fact, Dan's cousin is one of the guitar players in it. But they're going to be playing Monday night. And then another group, which I really like. Now, you folks sit there and say, well, I'm not into jazz. Someone might not be. You know what? Come on down and experience some of the other music. One of the groups that I can highly recommend, I like very much, this will be my third year in seeing them, is a group called Soul Stew. They are an R&B group out of Toronto. And they are fantastic. I heard another brass band last night. I'd say they were an R&B, more R&B, from a New Orleans... Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long way from New Orleans.
Well, there was
they're
a
both French, though.
Well, there was another group that I wound up emceeing from New Orleans. I mean, that's the whole thing. It is truly an international Jazz Fest.
And there's all kinds of different jazz.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not even jazz. It's more R&B. There's some blues. I mean, don't sell yourself short, folks. What's some of the other ones, Nick?
Well, don't forget, tonight, our very own Gap Mangione will be at the Rochester Club. Esperanza Spalding will be at the Kodak Hall
fantastic.
At the Eastman Theater tonight. She's unbelievable. Later this week, Moon Unit, Dweezil. Zappa will be playing, will be performing Zappa Plays Zappa, which is great. Wednesday night, Steve Martin. Thursday night, Daryl Hall. Friday night, Nora Jones. If you're not into the biggies, there's Five After Four. There's Nicholas Payton. There's... I'm looking for the people.
One of the other
page goes on and
one
on
of them
on.
That I got to interject here with is this. She's going to be at the Max at Eastman Place on Sunday. Is this Brandy Disterheff?
Disterheff. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, I happen to be playing her tunes on Thursday night.
Yeah.
And I, you know, when I lay out my music, I just look at the times. And then when I come into the studio, because it fits the time slot that I got to do, I go to type in her title of the song. And I had to laugh at this one, you know, because my only friends are pigeons.
Nice.
I did thought that was kind of cute.
Nice. So yeah, if you're at all into music, do yourself a favor and head on down. Like we said, lots of free stuff, lots of stuff you can pay for, all kinds of wonderful, wonderful jazz going on all week long.
Yeah, I'm down there. Please come on down, say hello.
Stop at our tent. It's
right on Gibbs Street. What they call Jazz Street. You can't miss us. We've got the banner right on out there. And folks have been stopping by already last night. It was a very busy night. And last night was perfect because it wasn't too hot. It wasn't too cool. And, you know, the folks... That's the other thing. This jazz event is family-oriented. I mean, people are down there with their kids. I have this one little boy. He couldn't be more than 4 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He comes up to our table. He goes, "I like your station. My mom and dad let me listen to it every night to go to sleep." I go, "Wait a minute!" And he's dropping some money into the box.
Nice.
I go, "Young man, what's your name?" He goes, "Casey, and I like Jazz 90.1."
Nice.
I go, "You are one remarkable." I says, "Tell you what," I says, "I can't do it this coming Thursday, but you listen next Thursday, and he goes, "Well, I listen." I just asked him, "What time do you listen?" He says, "Around 8 o'clock." I said, "I'll mention your name on Thursday, next Thursday, and say hello to you. Will you?" And I go, "Hey, any loyal jazz fans that starting out at your age, heck yeah.
Heck yeah."
Good
for him.
But, you know, that's what I mean. There's young, and there's everything in between. Even people past my age.
Yeah. Wow, there are people past your age?
Yeah. And not walking around in walkers either.
Wow, unbelievable.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Rich from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Rich. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Question about some files on my C drive. They're folders that say windows.old.001 and then three others that say 002, 003, and so on. Are those files I can delete?
Wait a minute. Mention those.
Maybe at some point you reinstalled Windows and told it to save your old Windows files.
Okay.
So if Windows is running fine for you,
then you're not missing any files that you know of.
Nothing that I know of. Everything seems to be going fine.
Yeah.
I mean, I have the partition that, you know, the recovery partition also. This is just right on the regular C drive with everything else.
Right. You probably could get rid of, well, certainly all, you know, all but the last one.
Okay.
Just in case.
All but the newest one, just in case.
It actually is a just in case folder. If something went wrong, you had to reinstall Windows, it saves all your old folders just in case.
Okay. Because it just seems like when I run a virus scan, too, it takes, like, forever.
Yep.
And the only thing I see that it's really stuck on are these four folders.
Yeah,
right.
In your Windows.
Like it takes forever to go through.
Yep, there's tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of files in the Windows directory. And if you've got, in essence, three or four Windows directories, it takes a really long time to go through all of those files.
It's essentially a backup of your entire operating system.
Okay.
If your operating system is running fine, then you don't need a backup of your entire operating system, right?
Okay. Right, and I've still got, you know, all the the disks and stuff like that. So if something were to go wrong, I guess I could reinstall the whole thing all over again.
Right. So as long as you're comfortable with that idea, go ahead and delete them.
Okay. Very good. That's all I needed.
That's all you get then. Thanks, Rich.
That was weird.
Yeah, that's, well, you know, there's a lot of that stuff that happens on your system behind your back.
Yeah.
That's true of every operating system.
Where's mine?
It's not just a Windows thing. Macs do it, Linux does it.
On the Mac, if you go into Disk Utility, one of the things it tells you, Disk Utility is used to run some diagnostics, repair your disk, repair your directory structure. And one of the things it tells you is how many files you have on your disk. And I'm stalling until it comes up here.
Yeah, right.
And it's millions, literally millions of files on your disk.
Yep. One of the nice things under Ubuntu, is something called Computer Janitor, which will help you clean up old files that you don't need. So that's a very nice thing to run once in a while as well. But generally speaking, if you find files like that, Rich did the right thing. Rather than just assuming it was okay to throw it away, he called us first.
Yep.
The reality is that often we get calls from people who say, I didn't understand what this system directory was for, so I trashed it.
I found this 4-gig file called swap386 and deleted it. And, you know,
right.
Because it was 4 gigs, you know.
Right. So it's important, I think, to know what these things actually are before you start deleting them. That's one of the reasons many of these things are hidden. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. You can give us a call, you know, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free, 1-800-790-0415. We will be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
The boss is in the room.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, you are grooving to the sounds of sound bites.
And a little Van Halen thrown in.
Yeah.
All right. Windows Phone is finally living up to the name. Microsoft today announced Windows Phone 8. Which is Windows 8 on a phone.
Well, that's where it should stay, not on a PC.
Well, yeah, wasn't Windows 8 for desktops actually Windows Phone 7 on a desktop?
Well, no, it's now, yes. Sorry, well.
So Windows 8 on a phone came from Windows 8 on a desktop, which was really Windows 7 on a phone.
Well, and actually, what it's done is it's replaced the old Windows CE core of Windows Phone 7 with the same kernel as the desktop Windows 8, which means big changes for a critically acclaimed platform that's been struggling in the market. Microsoft's announcement came in a developers conference in San Francisco. The new Windows Phone 8 will look and act a lot like Windows Phone 7.5. You'll still have the live tiles and the same 100,000 apps. The home screen will be enhanced. You'll now be able to fill the screen with tiles if you like. The two existing tile sizes will be joined by a third smaller tile. Tiles will be resizable, and the OS will be available in a wider variety of colors and themes. But Windows 8 will be much more tightly tied to Windows 8. See, now I'm already confused. Windows 8 will be much more tightly tied to Windows Phone 8 than Windows 7 and Windows Phone 7 were, with something called bidirectional sharing, which I'm pretty sure is illegal in most of the Bible Belt. They'll share the same kernel, the same file system, and the same basic interface metaphor, Microsoft's new array of sliding tiles, which it calls Metro, and which we have a shorter name for. The new OS will support three screen sizes, the existing 800x480, 1280x720, and 1280x768. Apps will automatically scale to fit, and developers won't have to create multiple versions. The new kernel is said to support processors with up to 64 cores. Wow.
You think that's enough?
For now. Well, Windows needs them. Windows needs them.
Some graphics cards have 100 cores.
I know.
Yeah.
The underpinnings of Windows Phone 7 are the primary reason Microsoft hasn't had support for multi-core chips. It's why they haven't had LTE on CDMA. which requires IPv6, and why they haven't taken advantage of the latest generation of systems on a chip. That's all changing now. The new platform will support swappable CD cards for storage, IPv6, which enables CDMA LTE phones on Verizon and Sprint, and NFC, near-field communications. The file system is now NTFS, and the OS supports enterprise-level on-device encryption. A new wallet app will combine mobile payments and the ability to store loyalty cards and tickets, like a mix between Google's wallet and Apple's passbook. Chase Bank will be the first major partner for Microsoft's wallet. It really looks like when Microsoft is galloping out of the gate with this particular thing. Device drivers will have a lot in common with Windows RT tablets, although Windows 8 has greater security, so you won't be able to arbitrarily connect devices without the okay of the person you're connecting to. The programming tools are changing as well. While the OS will still support Silverlight for existing applications, that's on its way out for new stuff. Yes, all those of you who spent several years learning to program in Silverlight, you might as well just give up now. Now developers can write native code as well as XNA, C#, and HTML5. They can also now use the full Microsoft .NET suite instead of the previous Compact framework, which was junk. The existing 100,000 apps will run unmodified on Windows Phone 8, but there will be a raft of new APIs. So, can't wait for Windows Phone 8? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. I have not yet seen the new Windows Phone 8.
Yeah.
But I am looking forward to it.
That's where it should stay.
Well...
on the phone.
Yeah, well, I know you don't like Windows 8.
Or the Surface.
Well, the thing of it is, too, is it's scary, folks. And like I said, hear me now, remember me later. Windows is becoming just like Mac in that supposedly they're apps.
Right.
Anything to work with Windows 8, you got to get from the Microsoft App Store.
Right.
That's what will work. Now, 10-1 odds, if developers want to work with it, they're going to have to ask Microsoft for their permission or who knows do what. But again, they're going to have tighter control on it.
Right, and they've got it's for the same reasons that there is a Google Play and an App Store for Mac, and the reason is they get a piece of the action.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's two things. One is a piece of the action, and second is to control what actually goes into the store. So,
and it is... a little easier from the user standpoint, especially novice users who can go to a single store and find everything. But there was a big, kerfuffle this week in the Mac App Store. A long time, very popular program called Text Expander had to remove itself from the Mac App Store. One of the requirements Apple has instituted recently is sandboxing, which means a program cannot access data from other programs, which theoretically makes them safer, more secure, and a runaway program can't take out your whole operating system. But the purpose of Text Expander is to expand text. So I can type SB in my word processor, and it puts in my soundbite signature. So you can type in just a couple of letters, and it puts in your entire salutation or your entire email address. So it expands text for you. Well, sort of by function and by design, that program must interact with other programs, which means it cannot be sandboxed. So they had to remove themselves from the App Store to maintain their functionality.
Right, and that's one of the things that bothers me about Apple. They set what really are not bad rules at all, but then they're slavish to them.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody who turns around and says, we know this is a good product.
Right.
We know it's useful. It violates one of our rules, but that's okay because we know the people. It's a good product. We know it's not a bad product, yada, yada, yada. That's a problem. I don't like the fact that if you want to write a better version of something Apple already has available, you can't.
It's got to be different enough, and that appears to be one of those arbitrary things.
Right.
Again.
It can't just be better. It has to be different.
And for developers that don't sell their software for the Mac App Store, they're sort of at an inherent disadvantage because by being in the App Store, Apple, in essence, is doing all your marketing for you.
And taking a cut,
yeah. Usually what we see less than a cut than what a typical software developer gets after it goes through, publishers and distribution and warehousing and freight What was it in the olden days? That was the old argument for shareware. You give the author $10 for his program directly, because normally in the store that would be a $60 program, and the author would get $5
right
at the end. So now Apple takes gives the author 70%, keeps 30% for themselves for housing it, storing it, and promoting it for you. And they did announce during their you hit that button again. I'm getting echoing now in the headset. Whatever button you just hit. We're back to a weird echo in the headset.
All I did was
turn your mic up. Yeah, now. Now there's no echo when you turn your mic. Yeah, now I'm getting an echo. That's weird.
Yeah, all I'm doing is turning my knob.
It must be your open mic. I'm hearing too much in the background, yeah. But anyway, Apple announced that they've paid $5 billion to their developers.
No, turn your mic that way a little bit.
How's that?
See, yeah, maybe.
Here, I can...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a little better. So your mic was picking up me because you had it pointed a little bit toward me.
All right, so I'll just keep it this way.
But now the camera can see your backside. And
that's about the best side.
People have commented
my bald spot.
Lower than that, on things we unconsciously do.
Hey!
You get a hitch in your get-along. And
yep. There's an old picture of Tony Placilla on our website that you should go find. But we're going to go back to the phones right now. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Larry. What's your question?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I got a Windows problem. About 3 weeks ago, I put an ad on Craigslist. And then after that, I kept getting this box that keeps coming up saying, I have to verify your Windows software. I'm wondering if it's legit. Or if somebody spammed me, and how do I get rid of it?
It depends.
Yeah, because there is
There is a legitimate thing from Microsoft.
To update.
The Windows Genuine Advantage, and that's what it should say in the title box of that window.
Right. It comes up, and it's got a little three-colored star next to it.
Yeah, but the question is, in the title bar of that window, does it say Windows Genuine Advantage?
I think it does.
Don't think. You got to make sure it does.
Yeah, there is a multicolored star on the right.
Right.
What you can do is Google it, Microsoft Genuine Software Advantage, and look at the graphic, the images that come up,
and
see if they're the same. If they are, what's happening is Windows is saying, we need to verify that you own a copy of this software.
All right. Well, it was, Windows 7 was installed in my unit when I bought it. You know, it's an HP unit. So,
well, shouldn't be a problem. Okay. You ought to have a CD or at least a sticker somewhere that has your license code on it, and it may ask you to put that in.
But, yeah, Microsoft does this every now and then. We've joked about it in the past. They assume everyone is a thief, and they have to run a program on your computer to verify that you did buy that version of Windows. And quite often it comes back with the wrong answer and says you are a thief and stops you from using Windows.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That's what I use for my business.
Yeah. So, in fact, if you keep canceling that Genuine Advantage, eventually it will
stop.
Yeah, your machine will stop working because it must be authenticated.
So look through the papers you got with the machine and look. Is it a laptop or a desktop?
It's a desktop.
Well, look around on the machine itself and see if there's a sticker with your number on it. It should be
five sets of five numbers. It's 25 digits.
Yeah, it's 25 digits. Five sets of five numbers.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah. Now, one of the problems that has occurred in the past is there's been some unscrupulous dealers that will buy, in essence, they buy one copy of Windows from Microsoft and then put it on 100 machines.
Mm-hmm.
And then when this Genuine Advantage thing come up, well, that's your problem.
Yeah, but that you shouldn't see anything like that from HP.
Right.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Yep.
Thanks.
And that's he's another one. He did another good thing. It's people are being good this week. When you get a message you don't understand, you know, talk to somebody, call somebody, Google the message, because a lot of bad programs are sneaking in now with fake update messages.
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
You need
don't
to
assume.
Yeah, you need to update
Flash.
You'll
become the first three letters of that.
Right. Yep. Also, this reminds me to remind everyone, when you buy a computer with Windows on it, make sure that somewhere on it is the legitimate Windows sticker.
The key code, yeah.
It's going to have the code on it. It's also going to be holographic.
One other thing that they're starting to do, which is smart, is for you folks with laptops, you might not see it, the sticker there. You got to pull the battery out. They've gotten smart because it wears off.
It was on the bottom of the computer, which would wear off over time.
So a lot of folks nowadays, the companies have gotten smart, and they're going ahead and putting the code inside on the battery.
Yeah, inside the battery bay. That's where Apple has almost always put its, is inside the battery bay. So that
it's actually starting to peel off a little bit, too.
Well, that's where it's good to take a little clear packing tape or scotch tape, at least over the 25 key code.
Yeah, I don't actually care because I haven't had Windows on this machine since the day I bought it. But
for other folks, so.
Right. I don't care if it wears off. I may just peel it off myself because this one now has...
Well, that's a Windows license you could sell to somebody.
Ubuntu on it. Yeah, I know. Or go
back to
$35.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Good luck with that.
There was a day when a whole bunch of people organized. They all met at Microsoft and brought their disks back and said, we want our $35. Microsoft gave everybody.
Because they weren't using Windows.
Their $35 back.
Hey.
They brought their laptops to prove they were running Ubuntu or whatever, operating system they were running. And their
legit
disks and Microsoft peeled off all the stickers, gave them back their $35. Everybody went on their way.
And that's what it should
took
be.
You have to bring your original disk.
Mm-hmm.
Your machine so they could peel off the sticker.
Yep.
And you were done.
And they saw that you weren't using their OS.
Yep. And they
Bingo.
Booted it to make sure that it wasn't running their OS, and you were good to go. It was great. It was really, they did the right thing. They've said from the beginning they would do that, and they did it. So it was pretty nice.
They haven't done it again, though.
No, they now don't say that anymore either. But, they said, yep, this is what we said. Yeah. You're all here to do this. We're going to do it.
That was actually the result of a lawsuit that some hardware manufacturers put against them. So say Dell wants to make a computer with Microsoft Windows, and they want to make another computer with Linux. The Microsoft's contract with them said they had to pay for Windows on every computer, even if the computer didn't have Windows on it.
Right.
Which was a genuine disadvantage and disincentive to put anything but Windows on the computer because you got to pay for it anyway.
Yep. There are half a dozen places where you can actually buy a laptop or a desktop that comes with Windows installed, and it is invariably cheaper.
Yeah.
And faster and, everything else. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. And you lucky people, you have nothing better to do than listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Mark from Greece on the line. Welcome, Mark. What's your question?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
Good. I just wanted to, again, thank you guys for having such a great show.
Thank you.
I really love it and appreciate it. And I called a few weeks ago. I suggested people for an alternative to Photoshop, the GIMP.
Yeah, the GIMP. I love the GIMP.
Great program. I have another suggestion for people who are diehard Mozilla fans.
Yeah?
Which I am. I mean, I'll use Chrome, and I think it's great, but there's something about Mozilla I love.
Yep.
But there's something I hate about it, too. It drives me crazy. Every so often, I'll go to do something, and the browser just doesn't work right. Something goes wonky.
Uh-huh.
And it happened to me a few weeks ago, and I went over to my other secondary computer where it doesn't get used as much, and I downloaded Moz Backup. And I went to that computer, and I just saved the general settings, nothing else from it, no cache, no bookmarks, anything. And I brought that saved file on a flash drive up to my main computer, and I loaded that backup of the general settings. And, boy, it fixed everything I was having a problem with.
Nice.
On that browser. So now I use the Mose backup once a week, and I make a weekly backup in case something breaks, because I was trying to get into Google Images, and none of the images would load. Load. And I don't know what happened, and this solved the problem, and it's running great. So I just wanted to pass that along to people. If you're diehard Mozilla fans and you're having issues with it every once in a while, which I do, something in the settings goes crazy, and that worked wonders. And now I don't even have to worry about pulling it off a secondary computer, because I'm going to weekly back up that file, you know, all of them, obviously.
Right.
Not just the settings, so I keep my bookmarks and everything. But it was just a great little alternative that I was able to do, and worked out very well.
Yep. Nice. Good.
So
thank you, Mark.
I passed that along to people.
Yeah. I had the opposite problem. I run Chrome, and it automatically will back up all my settings. If you're a Google user, Gmail user, it backs up all your settings. And then when you sign in from another Mozilla, another Chrome, it actually will copy, you know, brand new Chrome, it will copy those down.
That's nice.
Well, yes and no. For most of the stuff, it's all right. But for the bookmarks that I have at home, I don't want those at work. And the ones at work, I don't want at home.
Uh-huh, yes.
Luckily, you can go in and change that. You just have to remember to do it for every new, you know, machine that you start up and put Chrome on. But yeah, I did that, and so I don't get the things I don't want. But it will. Right now, I can copy passwords. I can copy completion stuff. There's a whole series of different things that you can turn on or off. As you go along, so it's really pretty neat, actually.
Well, I'm going to keep that in mind, because that sounds like a great alternative too. So,
yeah, it's one of the neat things with the Chromebook is if you use Google for all of your stuff, Google Chrome, Google Docs, you know, Google Sheets, Google everything, then the
Google Cheese
Sheets.
Sheets.
That sounds like cheese.
Cheese, yeah. There's very little storage in the laptop itself. It's got, you know, like a 4 gig flash drive, because all of your stuff lives on the internet, so you don't need any local storage, and that can make the machine a lot faster. And it also means that you can go to anybody's computer, anybody's Chromebook, and log in as you, and all of your stuff magically appears.
Right.
It's, you know, it's network home folders, you know, like some of the, you know, larger corporations and school systems have.
Right.
But on a personal basis.
What's also interesting is that if your company is on Google for mail and apps, if you have Google apps for your company, you can manage all the Chromebooks. So if they sign in on a Chromebook to your company's stuff, you can bring down all kinds of apps, you can bring down all kinds of settings, you can set up VPN, you can change where they can and can't go. You can set a home page. I mean, if you own the laptop, the Chromebook, you can do all that stuff. You know, that's certainly your right to begin with, because it's your Chromebook. And so when they sign in, they get all those settings. Now, if they sign in as somebody else, if they have a personal address that they sign in with, they get their settings. Because there's nothing else in the Chromebook. There's no real operating system or anything else. I'm waiting for an upgrade to mine. I have a CR48, the original Chromebook, and they say within a few weeks we'll get the new version of the operating system, which will allow offline use. Mm-hmm. So even if I am somewhere where there's no wireless, I'll be able to write documents and create spreadsheets and do all of that stuff.
Then put them up.
And then they automatically go up when I have a network connection.
And they've got a Chrome box out now, too, a desktop machine starting at $329.
Yep, $329 for a Chrome box, and essentially, again, it's Chrome. It's the Chrome OS. And if you haven't seen the Chrome OS in a while, check it out, because it is now much more than just the browser. It's a real operating system with real stuff in it. So it's really pretty neat. And for a few hundred bucks, bang, you're online doing whatever you need to do. Makes a lot of sense to me. You know, I would rather replace a $400 laptop or a $400 desktop than a $1,000 laptop or desktop.
And they're just as powerful. I mean, you know, like you say, they can run just as efficient if you're doing everything, you know, putting everything up on the cloud.
Yeah. Well, Mark, I'm sorry we kept you on.
No problem. It was very interesting. Thanks for the information.
Thanks, Mark. Bye-bye.
Yep. Bye.
But yeah, I'm a big fan of working in the cloud. I completely admit it. It makes life so much easier. It doesn't matter where I am. All my stuff is there. It's great. There's almost, and I'm almost never anywhere where I don't have a network connection.
Yeah, I know. That's what I mean. And with the tablet, you know, with me with the tablet, like I say, I can be anywhere and I can log into it and get to stuff if I got to look something up. If I'm unsure with something and I'm at a client's, oh, no big deal. I just log in and boom, I can see everything that's backed up, you know, and it's right there.
And with the Chromebooks, you can even buy a model with cellular service and you get, what is it, 100 meg a month free?
Yeah, something like that.
And so, you know, that's enough to do your email.
Yeah, heck yeah.
It's enough to write a document if you need to, or at least upload one after you've written it offline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sharing it with others is easy. The other nice thing about corporate use of the thing is you can decide what can be shared, what can't be shared. So, for example, my whole company needs to have the company phone book.
Mm-hmm.
So I put that up in my Chrome area, and I say this is shareable with everybody. So when they log on, they get the whole phone book. One person changes something, adds something, whatever, whatever, up it goes.
Yep. And, like, again, it makes it just convenient for everybody.
Makes it convenient, makes it easy to use. And it's one of the things that companies really want is the ability to manage the devices without having to see the devices. So I, as the computer guy, don't have to go running around to everybody's desk. Are they in today? Are they not in today? There's an upgrade. There's a problem. There's a yada, 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 yada. There's no, upgrades are automatic with the Chromebook. The settings come down automatically. It's very, very easy to use.
Well, when I was up setting up for the Jazz Fest, I mean, there's a lot of folks up there, you know, over on Gibb Street, sitting out waiting for, you know, stuff to start. And they're sitting out there having coffee. And I saw a lot of tablets, maybe a few laptops. But I was very surprised. I saw a lot more tablets up there.
Well, yep. It's with a laptop, you almost have to have a lap to set it on.
Right.
With a tablet, it's a lot easier to hold, you know, only one piece instead of the two of a laptop.
And there were two folks standing in line waiting to go into one of the halls, and they had their Nook with them.
Nice. Yep.
So as they're sitting there waiting, they bring their foldable chairs, these little foldable chairs, and they're sitting up against the wall. And
reading.
They're sitting there reading.
That's how it works. The big thing about the iPad is it's really designed to be a consumer device, not a creator device. When I want to consume media of whatever sort, sure, I turn to a tablet of some sort. But when I want to create documents or whatever, which is about 90% of what I do, I'm much more a creator than a consumer, I can't use a tablet. It just isn't efficient.
Yeah,
you know, I can write 10 times faster on a tablet of some sort than I can on a laptop of some sort than I can
with an actual keyboard.
Even with a keyboard.
Oh, really?
It's just not as it just has never been as useful to me.
Okay.
There are a lot of creation programs available. The Photoshop Touch is out for
I'm not
doing
saying
some really
the, you can't do it. I'm saying can't do it.
Right.
For me personally,
individual
it just
choice.
Doesn't work.
A lot of there's a lot of artistic stuff. We see people, you know, well, you used to have a sketchbook and a pen, now you have a tablet and a stylus.
Well, I had a friend, she was debating whether to get her Nook. And remember I was asking you about it and I passed your comments on to her and she got one now and she's hemming and hawing whether she should have spent the money. Right. She loves it, you know, because she can get her books on there. Download the different books and read them there and be around the house or outside. you know, and she's connect wirelessly, and she can check her email, surf the web, do everything. And that's what a lot of folks like about it. You know, it's just to do some simple stuff, surf the web quick for something. Oh, I want to quick look this up. Grab the tablet. You don't have to go into the computer room. Yep. You can do a quick search. And, you know, it's there. So, you know, it's, now she can't live without it.
Yep.
And that's the way it goes.
One interesting thing, and my ears are so old, I can't tell the difference anymore. But my daughter's earphones died for her iPod Touch. And she died. The cat ate them.
And then they died.
And then they died.
They bled to death.
They bled to death. And so she didn't have anything. And so I gave her a set of mine, which I didn't tell her I got at the dollar store. And she said, "Dad, these are great. The sound range is so much better." I don't know, because I don't. My ears aren't that good anymore, and I don't actually have
them. You and me both.
Well, I also don't have earphones for an iPod Touch, because I don't have an iPod Touch.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that, but she's a music listener, and she's young enough that her ears hear everything.
Yep.
And she thought these other headphones just had way better dynamic range than the one she got from Apple. I don't know.
I used to do that with my son Matthew, because he would break them so easily that I just get 5 or 10 of them at the dollar store, and they last a couple of months.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But then his last birthday, I got him a good pair of $30 earbuds, and he loves them.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And they've survived 6 months.
Well, sure. He's older now.
Well,
too.
They get a little older, you know.
Yep.
Comes with the age thing and that.
But then I did give her a good pair of Samsungs that I had, and she said, "This is even better dynamic range." So she was very happy with those.
Yeah.
I'll never see them again.
Actually,
you should know that after how many years now?
Yeah, exactly.
We sell the standard Apple earbuds. They have a $30 pair, which is the basic pair that come with the iPods. Then they have an $80 pair that's got twin drivers in each bud.
Yeah,
they,
so that's gotta
be better. Sound good, but it's $80. But we also sell Skullcandy, which is a very, very popular brand. And
I have a pair of those that my daughter will never get her hands on.
$25 for earbuds, and they sound really, really good.
It's and I also have a pair from a company called Chick Buds,
the
pair that isn't pink and have butterflies on it. And they sound phenomenal. I mean, phenomenal.
What's crazy is that a lot of headphone companies are partnering with, you know, rap stars and musicians, and there's a $300 pair of Beats earbuds because Dr. Dre put his logo on them. $300 for a headphone, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. But I'll tell you, one of the things I really liked about the Chick Buds is they came with multiple ear pieces.
Yeah, a lot of them do that now.
So that, you know, when my ears, I get fluid in my ears all the time. And so the holes are now smaller. And I can't fit a regular pair of headphones.
Unequal sized ears. Yeah.
And that's the problem that I really have with the Apple headphones. They just, half the year, they don't fit. They simply don't fit in my ears. You know? So with the Chick Buds, and I got the black ones, not the pink ones. They're magnificent. They're magnificent headsets. And they make all kinds of other cool things that I'm trying to get them to send me. These headphones with, you know, I can change the ear hole piece, whatever they call that part. They're great. They're great. Great sound. They sit in my ear so comfortably I don't even know they're there. And they're just real, real nice. They're real, real nice headsets.
I wonder what the technical name is for those things.
I don't know. They're probably, it'll say it right on the thing. This is the one I have. The Fawcett Gold Edition.
The Fawcett Gold.
Yeah, the Fawcett Gold Edition. Really, really excellent headsets. Full disclosure, I did a review of them, and they didn't want them back, which was very nice. But they're just excellent. They're just excellent.
It's a sanitary issue.
Well, there's
We don't accept returns of earbuds at our store either.
Well, and that's what they said. I said, you know, I'm happy to send it. She said, no, we can't take them back. Oh, yeah. So I review a lot of things that I send back. Not these. All right, we are going to take a slightly longer break, but don't get impatient. We'll be back for an entire another hour. And all you have to do is wait patiently While you're waiting, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Because, as you're probably aware, you're listening to Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are delighted to have our friend Dar on the line from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Welcome, Dar. What's your question?
Greetings, gentlemen. You're going to regret saying that.
Why?
Because you're going to get an earful. All this belly aching about, well, it's old, we can't help it, it's the way we are, sounds like a typical Windows user saying, well, you know, the computer's a year old, it's bound to get slower and all this stuff. Quick example, 40 years ago, the hearing, in especially the right ear, was maybe 50%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's 100%.
Really?
And that's a real pain in the butt, because you can hear every sound now.
What did you do?
What did I do? I spent the past 40 years cleaning up the diet, no dairy. Okay, that's the number one thing. That'll
yep.
clog up your ears, your arteries, your guts. You could be taking all the vitamins in the world, as I was, and it wouldn't help. The asthma was there, the allergies, the headaches, all that because the vitamins fell into the gut where all that mucus was fermenting,
mm-hmm.
and they couldn't get through. Notmilk.com, again, and Dr. McDougall on YouTube on dairy. Second thing, okay, was fixing the stringers because was pulling a dishwasher through the patio doors and it kind of stuck and forgot that the motor's rubber mounted, so it slingshotted, and I'm falling down the stairs.
Wow.
Oh, it was fun. Being a former motorcycle racer, you know how we've got that gyroscope?
Yep.
Twisted out of the way. Nevertheless, the right ear plugged up again. Not as much as 40 years ago. Yeah. And it was weird. And kept thinking, well, maybe go to a doctor and get him to what is it, syringe it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the voice said, no, wait. Went to the osteopath. Get thee to an osteopath. That's my final words to you guys.
Interesting.
Hold on. Here's what it was. It was that subluxation, that muscle strain caused by the gyroscope effect, which actually pulled the nerves or impinged on the nerves, the muscle tension.
Mm-hmm.
She adjusted the neck. The shoulders, and this is an osteopath, not a chiropractor.
Right.
Chiropractor, most of them, all they do is click bones. And the tendons and the ligaments and the fascia, you know,
yeah.
two thousand pounds per square inch.
Right.
And adjusting the bones isn't going to do the adhesions you've got in that.
Right.
Got off the table. Now, it's taking 2 weeks for the body to readjust. But the hearing is as acute as it was before, and no more fullness in the ear, which was the problem.
Right.
But again, if you consume dairy, the lovely mozzarella, parmigiano, or an Eastern European, you know, the smetana.
Right.
You might as well give up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm lactose intolerant, so I do very, very, very little of that. My problem is
that very, very little is mega too much.
Well, yeah, when my problem actually is tinnitus.
My problem was I couldn't walk for 40 years without wearing work boots.
Dyer, you know what you should have done instead of gone to the doctor for the adjustment?
The what?
You know what you should have done instead of going to the doctor for the adjustment? It would have been far more fun and cheap.
Go ahead.
Go out on the bike again and get another thrill. That'll clear things up.
Yeah.
You know, you get one of those people pull in front of you, and you got to do one of those evasive maneuvers again. That'll get the blood flowing and the head spinning.
Yeah, but back when I was riding, man, you didn't have idiots on their cell phones, and the roads were pretty smooth. They weren't pockmarked the way they are now.
That's what I'm saying now. That would be more of a challenge and maybe snap things back in for you.
No. Honestly, if you told me that the hearing would return with a vengeance, would have said, it's impossible. You know, your old stuff like that doesn't come back.
No, I hear you on that.
It's good to hear. Thank you.
Well, thank you for being... Oh, and kudos to the lady who, or gentleman who decides the gift packages, the caps and the windbreakers and that. We got it a couple of weeks ago, and the quality is just top-notch.
Excellent. I'm glad you think so.
Really,
thank you.
Really appreciate it, gentlemen.
Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Cheers.
Have fun, Dar. Well, that's very nice to hear. That's all Laurel Ann.
Yeah.
It's all Laurel Ann Romeo. She's the one who does, who picks all that stuff out and puts it all together.
That girl.
She's okay.
She is unbelievable.
She's okay in my book.
Yeah, she just pulls stuff together back, just recently. And I know she's already working on, the Art Loves Jazz. And we got the wine and cheese tasting, or the wine and jazz coming up on September 20th.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, down the road. Granted, we're just into summer, but the Art Loves Jazz, that was phenomenal. I mean, anybody that went to that, and if you missed it, you can go to our webpage. That's jazz901.org and check out the pictures. I mean, there was just great food. Great entertainment. White Hots were there and Tina Albright. And
I think I was off getting my daughter from college.
Yes, you were, sir. You were out of town.
Yeah.
But it was a great evening. We had a lot of fun. There's some great pictures of the event up there. And definitely put it down on your calendar to come next year because it was fun.
Come to think of that as getting my daughter out of hock for the summer. All right, here's a news item. Satirical newspaper The Onion recently described Facebook as a project of the Central Intelligence Agency. After years of secretly monitoring the public, we were astounded, a fictional agency deputy director told Congress. He was happy that Facebook users voluntarily post alphabetized lists of their friends, even status updates about what they were doing moment to moment. It is, he concluded, truly a dream come true for the CIA. That scenario, as it turns out, is not that far from the truth. Facebook has close to a billion users, that's billion with a B, many of whom post daily updates on their thoughts and feelings even when we don't care. The same thing happens on Twitter. Foursquare users share information about their location. Commentators on news sites express opinions and outrage, and as New Scientist review of procurement request shows, the U.S. government is keen to take advantage of what amounts to a society of self-surveillance. In a way, the government is behind the curve. Marketing firms already monitor social networks to gauge public reaction to product launches. And online chatter can be analyzed to forecast election results, for example. U.S. federal agencies want to harness those technologies in an attempt to gauge overseas reaction and opinion about America or even get hints on how to head off terrorist activity. And with these aims in mind, officials at the Department of State issued procurement notice on 1 June asking software developers to submit bids for a contract to supply tools that provide deep analysis of topics, conversation, networks, and influencers of the global social web. These tools will analyze conversations taking place in at least 7 foreign languages, including Chinese and Arabic. Once the bids are in, the software systems will undergo a 6-month trial in which they will examine online reaction to a specific event, such as a talk given by a U.S. ambassador. The military is even further along with such plans. In 2007, the U.S. Air Force awarded defense giant Lockheed Martin a $67 million contract to develop the Web Information Spread Data Operations Module, or WISDOM, which analyzes posts made to news forums, blogs, and social media. Military analysts are already using it to monitor Central and South America and the Pacific region. Lockheed Martin is now upgrading WISDOM with a $9 million contract from the Navy, which wants to understand the latest regional trends and sentiment and predict threats from groups and individuals. Other departments have similar plans. The FBI is talking to software vendors, and the Department of Homeland Security already has a monitoring system up and running. So, how do you feel about the government wanting your social media musings? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
One part that I don't know if you agree with me on this, that I have, you know, the statement that you were saying there, you know, gathering this information and making predictions, I hate it at election time, and I think they're doing themselves a disservice when they sit there and say, oh, poll turnout is low. Well, when they're sitting there and already predicting a winner, a lot of folks that haven't gone out to vote sit there and honestly say, well, why bother? They're already predicting this person's going to win.
Yep.
So there, I think they're, you know, doing people a disservice.
Yep. Well, they've been wrong often enough.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Particularly early
still, it's still not right.
I personally believe every single American citizen should get out and vote. I know there are a lot of cynics out there, and I'm done listening to you. The reality is, if you don't vote, don't complain. That's that simple.
Yeah, I sort of agree with Dave that if it's your candidate winning, you might not bother going out and vote. But if it's your candidate losing, you might want to go out and vote. But then your candidate's losing, so why bother?
Yeah.
So it's sort of and the problem with the time zones across the country too is at least here in you know New York we're sort of in the latest time zone, but you hear I see things in California where they say, you know, polls are closed in New York and this guy won. Well, the polls are barely even open in California.
Yeah.
All right.
Or, you know, it's that, well, they're open early, but I mean they haven't closed yet and there's a 4-hour difference.
Yeah.
So, you know, folks sit there, oh, why bother? You know, and especially presidential. Because, you know, like you say, 9 o'clock here, you go 3 hours difference, that's only 6. A lot of folks are just getting out of work and going home or going home eating and then going out to vote. And if they're already predicting, you know, this person happened, they're going to carry this state because they make all these predictions. A lot of folks, like you say, Steve, out in the, you know, the middle and you know, Western time zones are going to sit there and say, why bother?
What's that town that votes at a minute after midnight on Election Day? That the first town to vote every year?
Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Joanne from Greece, welcome. What's your question?
I have an iPad, and I like the camera in it. Of course, I've got the iPad 2, but the iPad 3, the camera's better. But anyway, there's Zoom apps you can get for it. There were so many, I didn't know what to choose from. Do you get any recommendations?
Well, one of the nice things about the App Store is that so many of them are free. You download it. If you don't like it, you delete it.
Okay.
And the ones that aren't free are usually only a couple of dollars.
Uh-huh.
But what you can do in the App Store is you can go by some of the ratings. Almost every app has some sort of a rating system on it, and they get rated from 1 to 5 stars by other users.
Okay.
So you can see what other people are thinking about them as well. And then some of the magazines, iPhone, iPad Life magazine, iLife magazine. I forget what they're called these days.
Magazines.
Yeah, that's one of the Mac World is the big Mac magazine, and they do a lot of iOS stuff as well. But there's one specifically for the iLife suites. And Todd's going to kill me because he locally here he writes for them. It was iPhone Life, but I think they've expanded that.
Okay, that's a good direction then.
Yeah, iPhone Life magazine, because the iPhone, iPod Touch, and iPad is too much to say.
Yeah,
right. Magazine. Yeah,
they should call it an iOS is not as familiar a term for most people.
iDevice magazine, maybe.
So
but,
they cover all of them.
Yeah.
Oh, that's neat.
And they have a lot of reviews of a lot of different products as well.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Sure.
All right. Thanks.
One thing I want to say, and I know you guys are probably unaware of this, but right now the station is being carried in a number of the hotels around the city right now, as we've got a lot of folks from outside of Rochester visiting. And I want to remind you folks that if you're listening to Jazz 90.1, yes, we are sound bites, and this is kind of an unusual format for the station. Nick, Steve, and I here have been doing this for 23 years, and we are on every Saturday from 12 to 2. So if you like this, you can always stream us. Once you get home, if you go to www.jazz901.org, every Saturday, the three of us are here answering your computer questions. And, you know, we have a toll-free number, so, you know, if you get home on that, tell your friends. We got listeners all over the world, and we'd love to have you folks as, you know, you go home and tell your friends back there. Of yep. the great, you know, the great experience that you had with the Jazz Fest. And, oh, by the way, I heard these guys on the radio that talk about computers and actually know what they're talking about sometimes.
Yeah, a while ago we did a bit on computers that are liquid cooled.
Oh yes, I just had one. Believe it or not, we just had one in. We built up for the guy, and we had to get more the antifreeze,
more liquid cooled.
And we got an email from Glenn in Pasadena, Texas, who said the product that is non-conducive, you could run your computer, is Fluorinert.
Finish reading that one, and we'll tease it.
Fluorinert by 3M, Fluorinert. He said it's expensive, but worth it. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
Let's expand on that email for a minute. We were mentioning a few weeks ago about this fluid we had read about that was non-conductive, mm-hmm. so you could stick your computer in it, fully running, and it's perfectly clear, it looks like water. And we've seen these demos where people dunk their computers in it or cell phones or whatnot. And it's non-conductive, so it's safe to do that, but it's got a relatively low boiling point, only 56 degrees Celsius, so half the normal boiling point of water. And you can use it to trace your cold solder. I always say solder because there's an L and a D. Cold solder joints and breaks in electronics. So you can repair the electronic fixing. So the gentleman from Pasadena gave us the 3M brand is Fluorinert, and we've been trying to find a place to buy it. I did find one place on eBay was selling a 32-ounce can for $175. And you'd need gallons of it if you're going to put your circuit boards in
it. Yeah. Speaking of that stuff, that also kind of reminds me of, what was it, Space Out? No, it's what it is it's a movie, and they're underwater. And
The Abyss.
The Abyss, yeah. And the guy has to go in and get this special
fluid. The thing with the mouse?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, the rat. That was real. This heavily oxygenated fluid really exists. And Navy divers and commercial divers will use it. It lets you dive ridiculously deep, because the problem with diving deep is the outside water pressure is so high, it basically crushes you. Mm-hmm. But if you've got fluid inside you, then you can dive deeper. Except our lungs aren't quite designed to breathe that much fluid, except when we're babies. So this is a highly oxygenated fluid. And in the abyss, when they put the rat under the fluid, that's really a rat really going in the real fluid and really breathing the fluid.
Yeah, there's a moment of panic Ed O'Neill was doing, you're drowning because you've got this.
You are. In fact, in the aviola, in the tiniest reaches of your lungs, there is water that oxygen dissolves into to get into your bloodstream. It's really hard to breathe water because water is so much thicker than air. So you can't do it very long. And when the guy asked, well, how deep can you go? And the Navy guy got kind of stoic and said, classified. Yes, it is.
It is actually classified. But this stuff exists, and you can breathe it.
That was such a cool movie.
Yeah, a really cool movie.
The water tentacle.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really.
Yeah, the Russian water tentacle is going to come out and nuke us.
Yeah, yeah, right.
That was, right. What, 15, 20 years ago now?
Yeah,
that's another one Cameron's got to... actually, that was one of James Cameron's first real big blockbuster movies that sort of brought him to the forefront of movie making.
Yep. Google adds a staggering 9,500 new websites every day to its running list of malicious internet destinations so the company can warn end users before they visit the sites... and there should be a period there, visit the sites. These are either innocent websites that have been compromised by malware authors or others who are that are built specifically for malware distribution or phishing, according to Google's Neil Provost. He wrote that in a blog published on Tuesday to coincide with the five-year anniversary of the company's Safe Browsing Initiative. While we flag many sites daily, we strive for high quality and have had only a handful of false positives. 9,500 a day, every day, and they've only had a few false positives. With Google bots scanning huge swaths of the internet, the company is almost uniquely qualified to know which ones are being used to steal passwords or spread malware that gives attackers remote control of people's computers. In 2007, Google unveiled Safe Browsing as a means to share that awareness with its hundreds of millions of users. According to Provost, about 600 million people tap into that awareness through programming interfaces built into the Google Chrome, Mozilla Firefox, and Apple Safari browsers. Some 12 million to 14 million end users also receive warnings when Google search results lead to a site that companies believe is malicious. The warnings, which carry bold letters that say, "Warning, visiting this site may harm your computer," appear after an end user has entered or clicked on a URL that leads to a site believed to deliver malware or phishing pages. Safe Browsing and a similar Microsoft initiative, which provides warnings to Internet Explorer users, have made people more aware of malicious sites, but attackers have adapted. Web addresses for many phishing sites remain active for less than an hour, so they can fly under the radar. Many sites pushing malware similarly try to avoid detection by rapidly changing their location using free web hosting services, dynamic DNS records, and an automated generation of new domain names. Google provides as many as 300 million malware warnings per day to Chrome users. It also sends thousands of notifications per day to webmasters and ISPs to help them keep their sites and networks clean. So, have you been hit by the Google warning? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
And it can be legitimate websites to get hit by this stuff. A couple weeks ago, the Twit website, This Week in Tech, got hit. And what it usually is somebody's web server has an out-of-date program, usually Java, JavaScript, PHP, Perl. There's so many web programs out.
Right.
And the bad guys have figured out a hole in that JavaScript. That's how the flashback Trojan malware was circulating on the Mac a couple of months ago. It was a hole in Java. And then when a server gets infected with this malware, anyone going to that server can be infected also. So it's a real big job for the server guys. In fact, Lee Laporte and they talked about it on Security Now with Steve Gibson after the Twit compromise. He basically had to hire a full-time server admin to keep this happening because they had a part-time guy that came in when they needed it, and this guy worked with a lot of other web, small websites too, and said, "Well, yeah, the big websites, like Google and whatnot, they'll probably have hundreds of full-time admins, probably even RIT." Full-time admins that their only job is to make sure all of the script languages are updated and free of exploits.
Yep. It's a very, very full-time job for anybody with a decent website.
Yeah.
It is what it is. All right, our next caller is Ed from Gates, New York. Welcome, Ed. What's your question?
Hi, guys. This is my first time calling.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
No champagne.
Pardon me?
We have no champagne.
That's okay.
But if you have some, go ahead and open it.
Anyway, I've got a roughly 10-year-old compact computer running Windows XP.
Mm-hmm.
The other day, I renewed my subscription to Trend Micro Titanium Internet Security and downloaded it, attempted to install, and it wouldn't, and I think the gist of the warning was that my version of Windows wasn't fully up to date. So I said, oh, yeah, I forgot. I never updated to Service Pack 3 completely, although I've been downloading lots of updates, but not, you know, the whole thing.
Right.
So anyway, I went to Windows, downloaded it, tried installing, and got a couple error messages about couldn't find the path to a couple files, and I ignored it and tried to go on, and installation failed.
Mm-hmm.
So it said, you know, we're going to, the uninstaller is going to roll back Windows, but probably not completely, so XP may not function properly or some such thing.
Right.
Typical Windows.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No explanation, just...
they just do it.
You're dead, buddy.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I said, well, I'll try again, and I did, and it was even worse. It failed more quickly, probably because my system's been changed or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, it's been compromised.
Yeah, so my first question is, before I do anything else, should I attempt to roll back Windows to a...
Boot and safe mode. Yeah, boot and safe mode, and pick a restore point that was the day before you started doing all this stuff.
Okay.
And sort of your bottom line may be reinstall Windows from scratch with whatever disk you have. So, which can be annoying. So if you have Windows Prime, then you have to load Service Pack 1, then you have to load Service Pack 2, then you have to load Service Pack 3.
And you'll probably end up with the same problem with Service Pack 3.
Well,
it may be one of the other drivers for some other thing in your system that's conflicting.
Mm.
What brand is your PC?
Compact, he said.
Compact Presario.
Ten years old.
10 years old may be an issue.
Yeah.
If you go to the HP website, since the HP bought Compact, they may have specific Service Pack 3 update instructions on their website, and drivers you have to download first before you install Service Pack 3.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I did go to Windows and had to check my system. To
Not Microsoft,
no.
HP.
Oh, HP.
Oh. Yeah.
It's because it's HP's hardware.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yep.
Now, the reason I didn't do the full Service Pack 3 install, you know, when it became available was, I'm still in the Stone Age in terms of my internet connection, so I looked at the size of the file, I think, and said,
Yeah, it's going to take forever.
Yeah, it's about 300 or 400 gig megs.
Plus, if I'm not wrong, at the time it was available, I thought I was hearing some comments to the effect that people were having problems with the Service Pack 3 install.
Yes, there was
because there were driver conflicts with third-party hardware.
They corrected that.
Yeah, back to your first point, I don't know if you still can anymore, but you used to be able to order a CD from Microsoft with the Service Pack 3 already on it, so you don't have to download it.
Mm.
I'm seeing they have... I found the link where you can get it. Service is ending. Yes, we know that. Let me scroll down. But... the other option is to go to a friend's house with broadband and download Service Pack 3 and put it on a flash drive.
Yep.
Well, I did successfully install it, and I managed to locate the executable file to run the wizard the second time around. So I, assuming that the download itself is still, you know, intact completely, then, you know. But anyway, that's the least of my problems. It's because this is getting in the way of other stuff, like... installing my, you know, the internet security update, even though...
Yeah.
Plus, I'm having problems. Before my second attempt, I also said, well, I better back up my, you know, at least Windows. And I tried my old back up my PC software, and something's going wrong with that, too, when I try to run a job.
Well,
that may be too old.
Yeah, you could also be having hardware issues. I mean, you know, if something's... You know, it's a 10-year-old machine. You could have maybe some sectors going bad on the hard drive without doing a diagnostic.
Problems in RAM.
Yeah, diagnostic on it to know, you know, fully what's going on.
Timing is off.
Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, there's a multitude of things that could be going on with it right now, especially on a 10-year-old machine.
I know I'm skating on thin ice here.
Yeah. Unfortunately, yeah, I mean... But but for right now, just to kind of get you back to square one, I would boot it in safe mode, pick a restore point that was previous to when you started doing all this.
Okay.
And go from there. Hopefully, some of the other files haven't been already changed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it might have re-updated some of the files, whereas then you get to the point that you've got to go back and... hopefully you've got your documents all backed up and you can just wipe Windows and reinstall.
I see. Well, I'm planning to build a new PC anyway, but I didn't want this thing to be. I still wanted this computer to be operational, which
well,
is
then,
why,
yeah. You know, what you do, here's
it's
what
easier,
you do.
It's easier to migrate to your new computer if the old one is still working.
Right.
Or what you can do is you back up the stuff, you go ahead and get the new computer, and then you do like Nick does, and go to one of the Ubuntu's or some version of Linux and play around with that.
For the old machine.
Yeah, for the old machine, and it would run like crazy.
I've got two hard drives, so I can...
Oh,
yep.
Yeah.
Sure.
There you go. You can.
But
have
I'll tell you, if you're building a new machine, go build that. Then you can move all your documents over and all of your stuff over. And once you're sure it's all over there and it's all right,
yeah,
then you can do one of two things. As Dave said, you can wipe it out and try Linux just to play with it. Or two, you can wipe it out and reinstall Windows.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that point...
Yeah.
Right?
I've got everything I need backed up. So.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
A 10-year-old, the system battery, what's the story with that? Is that do it automatically after a certain amount of time or wait till something happens? Or yeah,
well, those once you start seeing it lose, you know, a couple minutes a day, that's usually a warning.
Or the time zeroing completely.
Yeah.
But if you're connected to the internet, one of the things that you can set in Windows and the Mac is to
sync the time.
To sync the date and time. So you may not notice that your battery's dead because the date and time never shows up as zero.
Generally, the first symptom of a dead battery, and this is so weird, is Windows has trouble booting.
Yeah, it'll let you know the date and time are wrong.
Yeah, okay.
Especially on the compact.
Or it forgets what kind of hard drive you have and it can't find which drive you wanted to boot from because all of those things are stored in the CMOS.
Right. If you're on a network... sometimes it cannot connect to the network.
Yeah.
Because it assumes a specific date and time. It wants to synchronize with the network, and it can't.
And if you're going to build a machine, you can also pick up one of those wafer batteries and replace it yourself.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, they're easy to do.
Oh, and finally, your mention of floor inert brought back some memories. Where I used to work, we had a high voltage test kit that was immersed in it, and I think we used to buy the stuff in 5 gallon cans at the time, but I don't think it was anywhere near as expensive as this person referenced, but it was cool stuff though, I guess. But yeah, it was designed to prevent arcing and all that wonderful stuff, so kind of neat.
Yep.
Anyway, thanks very much, guys. You've been a big help.
Thanks, Ed.
All right. Bye bye.
All right, we are going to take a break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, so there's plenty of time to give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. We are the longest running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, happy birthday to Alan Turing. Who is the father of computer science and artificial intelligence. He was a cryptanalyst and mathematician and logician, computer scientist... during the Second World War, he invented the concepts of algorithms and computations. He designed the Turing machine. He broke the Enigma machine cipher that the Germans were using. He did amazing amounts of stuff, and
ended up being persecuted nearly to death in the end, and finally now the British government is apologizing.
Yeah, well, an inquest determined says it may. There's some author who now says he may not, in fact, have been. He may not have committed suicide. He was gay, and that was certainly not accepted in
back
the
in those days.
40s and 50s. And he was actually criminally prosecuted in 1952 because at that time homosexual acts were still illegal in the United Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
He actually accepted treatment with female hormones, also known as chemical castration, to avoid a prison term, but he died in 1954 of cyanide poisoning. The inquest at the time determined it was suicide, of course, but now there's some guy who says it might not have been suicide, but that's probably just sensationalist
nonsense.
How do you
accidentally take cyanide?
Well, he may have been murdered.
Yeah.
What he's saying.
Yeah, somebody might have slipped it to him. And
right. Wasn't that Socrates? I drank what?
Exactly.
When?
But he died in 1954. He was criminally prosecuted in 1952. And in 2009, the British Prime Minister Gordon Brown actually made an official public apology on behalf of the British government for the way he was treated during the war because of his sexual orientation. But he did an amazing amount of work, and he created a lot of the early algorithms. He created the Turing machine, actually the concept of the Turing machine. The whole point of the Turing machine, of course, is the Turing test. The Turing machine actually manipulates symbols on a strip of paper according to a table of rules. It's basically a computer algorithm thing. And the Turing test is a test of a machine's ability to exhibit intelligent behavior. The basic idea is, are you talking to a computer or are you talking to a human being? I think that says more about the intelligence of the human being than
really.
It does of the computer, particularly those people who think Siri is real. Siri's a lovely voice. I'd certainly like to meet the woman who was the model for the phonemes.
Yeah.
Nice phonemes, lady.
Did you hear about the British guy?
Who was using the phonemes for Siri?
Yeah. It was, well, it's a different voice in other countries,
right.
You know, localized dialect and accents as well. The guy in Britain apparently was a well-known voice artist, and whoever does it in America, they have under a you know, very common gag contract. But the guy in Britain was contracted by a company who was contracted by Apple, and he didn't have a gag order. So he on his commercials and stand up tours, hi, I'm the voice of the assistant in England.
Yep. Pretty interesting. What I discovered that was really interesting for me is, there's a speech. There's a guy named Lessac, L-E-S-S-A-C, who a lot of actors use his exercises and ideas to retain their vocal abilities on stage, and not only to be able to talk for long periods of time, but also to speak loudly and to speak clearly. Apparently, there's a Lessac Institute, which creates voices, phoneme, machine voices for computer use, which is pretty cool to me, actually, to discover that. So that was pretty – I don't know if it's the same guy. I don't know. But pretty neat stuff all the way around, really. So that was pretty neat. But at any rate, happy birthday, Alan Turing. I'm sorry you were born in an age when people were morons.
Yeah.
But there you have it.
Although, interestingly, it only took 50-odd years for Britain to apologize. I remember a few years ago, the Catholic Church finally apologized to Galileo.
Which was very nice of them.
Only took them 400 years.
Exactly right. I don't know if they've ever apologized to Giordano Bruno, but they at least apologized to Galileo.
Well, I love the one of the Apollo moon missions. They dropped a hammer and a feather on the moon, and they hit the ground at the same time.
Yep.
It was probably Schmidt. He was the geologist and would have had a hammer.
Exactly. Although where he got the feather, we'll never know. Never mind.
Everyone's allowed a few ounces of personal gear.
And he brought a feather. Whatever.
Well, and then there was the golfer. He fashioned a tool into a golf club and hit a 1,000-yard drive or some ridiculous amount.
Right.
Wasn't it Buzz Aldrin? Or
No, it wasn't Buzz.
Or Armstrong. Yeah, I think so. Was it Armstrong?
No, it wasn't on the first mission. It was. It might have been Carpenter.
I remember. Yeah, I remember him hitting the golf ball.
Yep. And kind of puffing up off the ground.
Yeah. Yep. It was really very cool.
It was Alan Shepard.
There you go.
On Apollo 14.
Okay.
All right.
Thank Google.
Thank you, Google. An Illinois woman who and the whole point of this was that if you go to Google this morning, you'll see a Google Doodle about Alan Turing. An Illinois woman who claims LinkedIn violated its own user agreement and privacy policy is spearheading a class action lawsuit against the business networking site in wake of the recent loss to hackers of private data. Katie Spurka, I've got to stop putting names into these things.
See, that's more than just your mic. I heard that perfectly well. There's like a second open mic around there somewhere when you crinkled that paper up. That's weird.
Katie Spurka, registered LinkedIn account holder since 2010, claims the company failed to properly safeguard its users' digitally stored personally identifiable information, including email addresses, passwords, and login credentials. Spurka, who filed a suit in the United States District Court in the Northern District of California, is demanding a jury trial on grounds including breach of contract and negligence. She says the users in the class action suit include individuals and entities in the United States who had a LinkedIn account on or before June 6th, 2012, including those who paid for an upgraded account. 2 weeks ago, LinkedIn reported that Russian hackers had stolen nearly 6.5 million passwords. You remember we talked about that and told everybody change their passwords. Users who are prone to reuse passwords across different websites, which you should never, ever do, were urged to change their passwords. With more than 150 million users, the password theft involved less than 5% of LinkedIn's user base. No member account has been breached as a result of the innocent incident, and we have no reason to believe that LinkedIn members have been injured, said Aaron O'Hara, a public relations associate with LinkedIn. Therefore, it appears that these threats are driven by lawyers looking to take advantage of the situation. We believe these claims are without merit, and we will defend the company vigorously against suits trying to leverage third-party criminal behavior. In the suit, Spurka, who pays $26.95 per month for a premium LinkedIn account, says LinkedIn's privacy policy promises users that all of the information they provide will be protected with industry standards and technology. She said LinkedIn failed to comply with basic industry standards by using a weak encryption format. The company had encrypted passwords with an SHA-1 algorithm, but the suit specifically pointed out that LinkedIn failed to salt the passwords before storing them. The salt adds a dimension to the hash that makes it more difficult to uncover the protected data. The suit also references preliminary reports that said hackers used an SQL injection attack, which lets attackers access databases via a website. So, are you a LinkedIn user? Did you change your password? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
It was Commander Dave Scott on Apollo 15.
Doing which?
The hammer and feather.
The hammer and feather.
And it was a falcon feather.
That's important.
Yeah.
Had it been an eagle feather, would it have dropped faster? We'll never know now, will we? Because we don't go to the moon anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A physicist tried to calculate Alan Shepard's golf drive. Theoretically, if he made a perfect shot, it would have a 70-second hang time and go about 2.5 miles.
Nice.
It probably wasn't a perfect shot, so he probably still holds the record.
I suspect that's true.
The record drive on Earth is 500 yards. So he probably got it a long way.
Well, wasn't the last mission up to the space station by a private vendor? I believe was
People still go to the Americans still go to the moon. Can still go to the moon, but America does not go to the moon.
Right. The space station, they're having trouble getting that going.
Dragon X, because the shuttle has been retired and there's no ship ready yet.
Yeah.
Private company. It was
Virgin?
Tesla, wasn't it?
Virgin.
Virgin, yeah. Virgin
It was Dragon X.
Well, I thought Virgin
was
had
that, an... That Virgin has one that's
is
going
that
to go, but Dragon
Musk?
X went. Yeah. Yeah. I have a student who's a very dear friend of mine who, she was a welder on the Dragon X capsule.
Oh, yeah?
And now she's working at Tesla.
Elon Musk... the same guy that made Tesla, the Tesla car. They just came out with a sedan now, too.
Right.
But the Chinese launched a manned ship. They're now the third manned space
right
country to launch their own ships up to their own space station.
Right. Luckily, humans still go into space, just not America. All right. That music tells me that we're done for another week. Thank you for taking 2 hours out of your long and busy lives to spend with us. It is 55 minutes after the hour, and we are done. I want to thank everyone who called in. If you did not call in, that was silly. You have another chance next week, however. Please call early and often. The Chicago voting method also works for calling us. But we are done. We are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Coming up, Linda and George will be here. George will be spinning the platters on some of the most amazing German music you will ever hear. And Linda has her club today, not the whip. It's the club, so George will stay in line. We're done. We're Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening.